Joe presents TKO, together with 32 Red.
Welcome to round three of TKO here on Joe, together with 32 Red. Very pleased to say our guest this week is the trainer and corner man of James De Gea, of course, will clash with Chris Eubank Jr. At the O2 on Saturday night. And I think I'm right in saying this is going to be a little bit more laid back than last week.
I'm hoping it is anyway.
I'm sure it will be.
Have you watched it?
Yes, I've watched it, yeah.
Good man.
It was pretty much what I expected, really.
So, Jimmy Mack...
Do you know what Banner he is?
Nah.
Well, you no, do yeah. now.
I don't. Nah. I was planning on looking to see what it meant, but I never got around to it.
Well, binary is just if you've got a yes-no answer to something. So, how you feeling, that's not binary. But if I said, are you feeling good?
That's a binary.
That's binary.
Okay, thank you.
You good?
Yeah.
Good then. Also, Carl, happy birthday, mate.
Thank you.
Happy birthday, mate.
32 years young.
Yeah,
young. Feeling good today?
Yeah, I'm feeling all right, yeah. Feeling all right. I woke up with a bit of a dodgy ankle this morning.
Have you? Yeah. That's what happened. I think the thing is, after 30, you wake up with aches and pains, and you just think, is this going to be permanent?
Yeah, nah, I don't know what's going on, but yeah, all right.
Jimmy, so I guess people know you primarily through your dad, Jim McDonald as well, senior.
That's right. You're
starting to get a reputation as a sort of a trainer in your own right. I think people are starting to realise that you contribute a lot to that corner. I can remember meeting you. I think it was the Mohammedi fight
at Bluewater in
Kent. So I think just after James had lost to George Groves.
Yeah.
And you were in a period of about 3 or 4 years sort of... I suppose they were like the wilderness years, weren't they, really? Because he had such a high profile for 3 years off the back of the Olympics. Then the loss to George, and suddenly you're in the midst of a rebuild that I'm guessing none of you really saw coming, did you?
Yeah, I suppose, when you lose a fight, especially because of the rivalry between the two boys, it was still early in their careers, but there's always that rebuilding process, but it just felt like it was just going on and on and on. And it was like, he was saying, oh, another one, what another one? And it was almost like, it got to a point, I think there was a time when he boxed in Bristol, and James beat a fella called Kachikian, and Badu J actually got knocked out that night by Derek Edwards.
Great shot, that was.
They was going to fight in a final eliminator to box for the WBC. Of course, where Badu J had lost, straight away they was like, right, that means James is going straight in. Then for some reason, I think they put Chavez Jr. as mandatory, who just moved up from middleweight, and it was just like, are we ever going to get there?
Yeah.
And obviously after that, we went a different route with the IBF.
Because around that time, 07, 08, you had the World Championships in 07.
Yeah.
You turned over around then, didn't you?
2009, I turned over.
Right. So obviously the Beijing Olympics, James was the star to come out of Britain. So a hell of a lot of momentum. And I think that momentum carries on for a couple of years after the Olympic cycle.
Yeah.
Well,
he was a big name, and obviously because of the Olympics and the Olympic gold medal in the UK, but he was also a big name in Ireland because he'd beaten Darren Sutherland, who a lot of Irish people were expecting to maybe go on and win the medal. But I think after the George Groves defeat, you have to give De Gea so much credit for... Did he fight for a European title
his very first fight
. But he had... They were kind of blue water shows and travelling around, not really big arenas. But he'd done it for quite a while. And that's... A lot of people get fed up with that. I think he deserves a lot of credit for carrying on and doing that.
Yeah.
It was interesting, though, because that night, certainly the first Blue Water show he did, I mean, there were sparse crowds. It was a very flat venue. But on that bill, it was Dillon Whyte in his eighth fight, Jordan Gill, who's, of course, headlining his first show next weekend, and Chris Eubank Jr. as well.
That's right.
And Mick Hennessy at that time actually had a very, very good stable with Huey and Tyson Fury as well. But people sort of forget that, I think, because they were all... I mean, Channel 5 shows, weren't they?
That's right.
But there wasn't a huge buzz around those guys. And James, of course, was the headline act. Did you ever cross paths with Junior at that time? Did you ever have any dealings with him? Because they did two or three shows where he was on the undercard of James, wasn't he?
I think only sort of like weigh-ins and stuff. But there was never any sort of like words exchanged or anything. It just sort of like we kept ourselves to ourselves and they kept themselves to themselves. There's never been sort of anything outside of the ring where they've sort of like... clashed. It's only just been sort of on social media, really.
It was interesting talking to him last week because I can remember there was one point where we were talking about the fact that Junior just hasn't really listened to him in the corner, him or Ronnie, who hasn't really been allowed to have any input. And there was a point where I'd asked him a question and he wasn't really answering it, and I thought, actually, how the apple never falls that far from the tree, and how can you expect your son to listen when your dad is someone that's just never really listened to him?
I got the impression last week that the dad was having a little bit of a dig at Junior, and then he kind of backtracked a little bit, but there's obviously issues there with him listening. I don't think he does listen. If you look at his performances as well, how he performs, like the Groves fight, the tactics never really changed or anything with Eubank, and I suppose now that bringing this new trainer in, they'll be saying, well, he's got a game plan, he's going to listen, but will he is the question.
Yeah.
It's when it's in the heat of battle as well. It's all right doing it in the gym when, you know, everything's relaxed and there's no pressure on. But when that first bell goes and the adrenaline's pumping and the atmosphere in the O2, will he listen? I'm sure we're going to find out.
Quite an interesting insight you've got, because you've actually been in the corner in some of the major venues, like O2 and Wembley Stadium, been out to the States as well. There's quite a big difference between being in the corner in the UK and being in the corner in the US.
That's right, yeah. Every sort of state has got a different line of rules and regulations. So there was one, I can't remember where we was in the Badu Jack fight in New York. You couldn't even like rest your arm on the side of the ring. Like they was like, nope, sit back there. And it was almost like the ring was over there and you had to sit back here. So it was almost like you were sitting in the first row at ringside, whereas over here in the UK, you're literally right in the corner, and obviously the boys can hear you from the corner.
Especially in a loud venue. I mean, the Irish fans are loud. You need to be proximity-wise close to yours,
I think, because you want to be listening to... New York is one that's been very strict. I fought there, and it was, I remember it just being way over the top. But, I think you need to be right up close and personal, especially if you're a trainer. You don't want to be sitting in the... It is like the front row, as you say.
And you're trying to give instructions and advice to the boys, and obviously they can't hear nothing.
Yeah, how much can you hear Jamie when you're in the midst?
Yeah, you can pick out things. You can't hear it all, but you listen for... Well, I do. I listen for voices. I'm sure James is an experienced, very experienced guy, and I'm sure he does the same. But you can hear certain voices. I think you hear what you want to hear.
Yeah,
and the rest of the noise is just noise. But you listen. You'll be listening to yourself and your dad as well, I'm pretty sure.
Mm. I guess you try and tune your ear to the one voice amidst lot, because there's a lot of shouting ringside.
Of course, yeah.
Yeah. Do you've learnt a lot from your dad? Of course, he's trained Alex Arthur, Takalu, Danny Williams. How much input do you have, and how much do you guys talk when you're in the corner together?
Yeah, we always sort of talk when the round's going on or whatever, and we'll sort of half score it as well. Sort of like, nah, lost that round, or nah, he's won that round. And
yeah,
we just sort of like all discuss in the corner just sort of how the fight's going. If you're reading something, one of you might not have seen something that the other person's doing or whatever. And yeah, we just sort of like always converse like in between rounds, but ultimately he's the one who gives the advice to James, like when he comes back to the corner.
Mm, that's interesting. Let's talk a little bit about the sort of early years, because you're a couple of years younger than me, aren't you?
I'm 28 now.
Right, so you would have been born, I guess, the year that your dad officially retired for the first time, I suppose.
So he retired in 89.
And because there was one comeback fight in 98.
That's right, and I was born in the 1990, but I don't even remember him boxing in 1998. Yeah. I was only, obviously, a kid. And I always sort of like knew, like going to school and stuff, that some of the kids would say to me in the playgrounds, oh, your dad, like, you know, was a professional boxer. And I used to go, yeah. I didn't think much of it. Mm. But then as I've got older, like they're the parents and that, especially he's known for like the big win over Barry McGuigan.
Mm.
And I was saying earlier to someone, like one of my good mates now, first time I went round their house, I was about 15, 16, so it was like, I was only in year 10, and I walked into the kitchen, and his mum went to me, rather than say hello, she went, your dad ruined my holiday. So I went, what are we talking about? She said, we were all massive Barry McGuigan fans, we got there like the day before, we went out to watch the fight, and for the rest of the week, we had an absolute stinker of an holiday. So, since then, I've obviously known that he was done quite well as a boxer. And yeah,
you grew up with him. He didn't actually go straight from fighting to training fighters.
Yeah.
So there was a few years there. So he grew up in your eyes, I guess, just as your dad and a normal guy.
Yeah.
And then he transitioned after. Was it after that night? He tried to come back in 98.
Yeah. It was almost like, again, like when the fighters are near the end of their career, they've still got that fire burning, and they want to give it another go. And it's almost like you've got to do it for yourself. And then once you realise that I can't be doing this no more, then you sort of just go, right, I've got to accept this and just move on to something else.
I think it's interesting because I can get that from your point of view, having like lost a really high profile fight, but knowing you've still got some good years ahead of you. But that's 7 or 8 years out of the ring. That's quite unusual, isn't it?
Well, it is. It's very unusual. I'm hoping, fingers crossed, that I'm not doing that in 8 years' time. But you never know. Like you said, I think fighters have a strange mentality, and they want to believe that they can fight forever. And it's, you probably think you still can, up until a point where you actually get beat in a fight and you realise I can't anymore. That's a difficult. That's when you need to have good people around you saying
that. Do
actually, you're done.
What's really sad is, you know, Danny Williams officially hung him up. We hope for the last time last year.
Yeah,
I can remember meeting him at 14-15 at Highbury. I've got a picture of both in Arsenal shirts.
Yeah,
and thinking, crikey, and it must have been a couple of years after we beat Tyson. And to think that half my life later, he's only just hung him up to put his daughters through private school. I mean, it's admirable, but it's the equivalent of you boxing now until you're 45 to put Carla and Rossa through uni.
Yeah,
it's mad, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. It's just something I can't really imagine doing. But, you know, people like Danny Williams, who would get a lot of stick, especially on social media and stuff, you have to think of the reasons why he's doing it and give him credit, because he definitely deserves it.
Because fighters these days are becoming more savvy in terms of planning an exit strategy from the sport, yourself included, looking at media roles and other things you can do after boxing, whether it's community projects. I suppose they're becoming savvy because of the lessons that we learn from fighters like Danny Williams, who of course your dad trained, by the way.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, and like I remember him as a kid growing up, and he was in some big fights, obviously the fight with Tyson, he boxed Klitschko, and yeah, it's just sad to see him just keep going on all these years later. Pretty much like Roy Jones Jr.
Roy Jones,
as well.
Exactly. Oh, man,
he's like one of the greatest fighters of all time. And, you know, there's fighters that he's boxing that can't even do his bootlaces up.
Yeah.
And it's just really sad to see.
And that's the problem. You don't want to be remembered for those later years when you've had so many like Roy Jones or Bernard Hopkins, who I suppose is probably the one exception to the rule in terms of longevity.
But there's not many like Bernard Hopkins. No. Roy Jones, if Roy Jones had retired after John Ruiz, I think that would have been ideal and perfect. But he's fighting in Latvia against guys you've never heard of, and it's sad to see, for a couple of reasons, because he's a legend, and he was pound for pound one of the best fighters of all time. You have to say that, like, he was a quality fighter, but he's just tarnishing that legacy. Hmm. And I've got a signed Roy Jones Jr. glove in my house. Yeah. This is depreciating every time he fights on.
So
he needs to stop.
Let's talk about James. Potentially a do-or-die fight for him, this. And I think there's a big chance that this might be the last time we see him on Saturday, win or lose.
Yeah, it possibly can be, because he's at a stage in his career now where he wants the big fights. And if the fights ain't out there that tick all of his boxes, he will walk away. He said, I don't need boxing no more. Like, I'm doing it because I'm enjoying the sport again. He sort of got in a bit of a rut after, where he was getting a lot of injuries, and he's just like, this is hard work.
Because he had, in those rebuild years after the first Groves loss, he had Gilmore's groin, didn't he?
That's right, yeah.
Just for people that don't know, because it's quite a common sort of football injury, that, I think.
That's right, yeah. So I think like Theo Walcott has had it. And he had this Gilmore's groin, and he was like, God, this pain is like killing me. And the surgeon said to him, you know, when we opened you up, there's three layers of like muscle like around this area. And they said the first bit of muscle had just completely like disintegrated. They said the second bit was like mashed up, and the third bit had been completely detached from the bone. Jeez. And they just said, how you've even boxed with that? They said you wouldn't have been able to play football with that. So the fact that you've even had a fight with it, they said if you'd got hit on that, mate, you'd have just folded in half, because the pain would have been unbelievable.
I can remember him saying to me, this is back then, said once this surgery has healed up, he'll be a different animal. And when it did, you said to me, you'll start to see his punch power now.
Yeah.
And then the next two fights was Wembley, when he chinned Brandon Gonzalez in four.
That's right.
Then it was Peraban
in Liverpool. Yeah,
because Groves boxed Dennis Dougley that night.
That's
who's
right,
of course, he's been the sparring partner. He was at the gym last week when we went down there.
Yeah,
American guy.
That's
and I guess that's the Nate Vasquez connection, isn't
that's
it?
That's right,
as well,
yeah. I think he brought him over, yeah.
The Mayweather gym together. But James has had quite a few injury problems. not least in the Badu Jack fight, which I think is kind of documented, but people don't talk about it a lot. Mm-hmm. But he threw something like 7 jabs in that fight.
That's right. And still 7 jabs in 12 rounds.
And still got a draw.
With a quality fighter, yeah.
Yeah, with a very good fighter. And it was only really snatched away from him at the last minute.
Yeah.
But talk to me about the situation with the IBF at that point, because they're very strict on enforcing those mandatories and they don't let you off the hook. And if you are in a position where you've got an injury, they're not really... not really great with exceptions.
That's
so
right.
What was the position he was in after the Jack fight leading it up to Caleb Truax?
So after the Jack fight, his shoulder was really playing him up, and there was actually talks of James fighting Callum Smith in the summer, because he was mandatory for Badu Jack. Of course, it ended in a draw. Mm. So Jack kept his title, James kept his title, and I think Smith was getting messed about with the WBC a bit. So I think he was going to take the fight with James. And for whatever reason, it never happened. And then he thought, I've got to get this shoulder sorted, man. It's just playing me up. Had his shoulder done. And they said when they was doing the surgery, they said, I think he had a 180-degree tear in his rotator cuff. His AC joint in his shoulder like needed restabilizing, so it needed to be like anchored like back into place. And then there was something that was wrong with the back of it as well. So he had, again, 3 operations in one. And the doctor said to him, listen, James, you're going to need a year to 18 months off of boxing. And he was like, nah, I'm not like... Anyway,
well, with mandatories, that's just not going to be possible.
Yeah. Then got the IBF was obviously saying, listen, you need to defend your belt or you've got to give it up. So he boxed Truax in the December, which is, I think, 5 or 6 months after the surgery. Mm. And the doctor told him a year to 18 months. And he just said, I just knew. As soon as I got in there, like, properly and started trying to let the shots go, it just weren't me, and I just thought, I've made a big mistake here.
Blimey.
And then obviously the rest is history. Truax went and got the win on points, and then from there James was like, do I call it a day? And he was like, do you know what, I've not done myself a service here, because I know in myself I got in there injured. So the IBF then come back and said, look, you can have the rematch, but it's the latest you can have it is, I think it was the 9th of April last year. So they said, if it goes past that date, we're just going to go down the line. So you either take it or you don't.
So frustrating.
So he's gone, I've got to take it, right? So that was the December, January, February, March. It's only like 3-4 months later. He said, trust me, I just need to be that little bit better and I'll beat Truax. I still won't be 100% because it still wouldn't have even been a year since I had the surgery. But I know, just give me that 3 or 4 months and I'll beat him, right? So he's gone out there, trained all through it. Was much better, still weren't right, but he was just bit down and just, it weren't a classic James DeGale performance. It was rough and head clashes, and it was a fight rather than him showing his skill and being in a boxing match. It turned into a fight, and he just grinded it out, just grinded the win out. Then he's had a good bit of time off, he's had a nice rest, let all the injuries re-heal, boxed in a little 8-rounder in September, and said, you know, I feel different class. Course, we're here now with a fight with Eubank Jr.
I reckon, do you think Eubank would have taken a lot away from those last 2 fights?
I think a lot of people have.
Yeah.
Without knowing the backstory and the injuries and how severe they were, people look at it and I'm 32. What age is James? 33?
He's 33.
Yeah, so they'll be looking at his age and the last couple of performances without really knowing behind the scenes. So they'll just know by what they're seeing. And they'll be looking at that and thinking maybe he's on the slide, but if you're saying that the shoulder is fine, then potentially we could see the best
see
ever
the
James
DeGale
there's ever been,
and
which is very exciting.
I think that's the big reason why the Eubanks has took this fight as well. He can say it ain't, but as you said, Cole, people, not just the Eubanks, but the public are looking, thinking, God, I remember when James was smashing Gonzalez and Peraban and Durrell and all these boys, looking unreal. Then all of a sudden, you don't go from like there to there like overnight.
Big fights are easier to make when people think they've seen vulnerabilities. I'm certain of that. And
you're proof of it.
Yeah, I am. And I think that it could be a similar situation here with James. So it's a blessing. It could be a blessing in this case for him.
Yeah, we're here now. So the fight's on. Not long to wait now.
I mean, there's elements of it that are sort of stupid in the sense of fighting when you know you're really injured, but also admirable in the sense that, because you know how horrible it is to be stripped of a belt that you've won. Ryan Burnett, of course, in the same position. So you have to admire the fact that he was willing to take that on. But that night at the Copper Box was a strange one. I can remember being there and I was sat with Lawrence Okolie and we went, after six rounds, he went, he's got to do something, because he was laying on the ropes.
Yeah,
and Truex was just all over him and there was nothing. For you, obviously, you've been to the height, the mountaintop, you know, when he beat Durrell for the title, and what an amazing night that must have been. But then the night where your fighter loses the title, that's got to be really tough.
Oh, it was horrible, mate, because it's, in football terms, it's almost like you're beating like the Barcelonas, the Real Madrids, and then you're losing to like an Everton. And I don't mean that to like
Saldic, that's what you want to say.
Nah. But it was just like, how can you beat all these boys, and then, no disrespect to Truex, just box him at home in England, in your own backyard, and just completely just not turn up? So it was a really like upsetting time. And on that sound, I was just with a few of the boys, like, just, we was down the pub, and I'm not a big drinker, and I was having a few beers. I just remember sitting in this pub thinking, I can't believe it. Phone goes, boom, the rematch. And it comes straight up. That was it.
Your heart rate goes up.
Put the pint down.
Back
put
in the gym.
Pint down, straight out of the pub and back home.
Wow, yeah. It was emotional for you and Jamie, wasn't it, when you lost to Josh in December?
Yeah, it was.
Well,
it was very emotional for us all. I remember the change rooms after. It was very, very somber. And I, in my head, I was out, finished. Frank Warren came in, and actually, you know, promoters get a lot of stick, but he was very sincere, and he wished me well, and he said he was going to back me, whatever I decided to do. And people, Tommy Coyle was crying in the corner somewhere, and yeah, it's emotional. But when you're invested in it, it's a full team, and it's like a, you know, your team become your family, really, and you're around them more than you're around your own parents. Or in my case, I'm around my team more than I'm around my own kids and my wife. And it's got to be the same for James. You've had a great relationship. And,
yeah,
and he's been with you from the start.
From day dot, yeah.
And so
yeah.
When did he what age were you when he turned pro? You were only a kid.
I'd have been 18 when he turned pro.
Pretty young.
Yeah, so, I'd have been 18. He was 20. He was 20. He signed the pro contract at 22, but I think he had his first fight at 23. So yeah, nearly 10 years ago.
Crikey. That's insane, isn't it?
It's mental, isn't it? It's a decade. Man.
Speaking of which, big news a week ago, Joshua Miller signed for June in New York. Tommy Coyle,
yeah,
I think there's a possibility he's on the undercard of that.
Yeah.
Certainly he's looking to kind of fix that. Will you go out there for that with him, do you think?
Potentially, aye. Tommy's a good friend of mine. He supports me, so I'll be out supporting Tommy. And I suppose I'll probably be in a camp for my own fight. I'm imagining if I do fight, it'll be around July, August, so I'll be training, and if Jimmy Moore's out there, I'll need to be with him, and that's a good excuse to go to New York.
But is there any specific place? Well, of course it is, yeah, I'll see you there. is there any specific place you guys base yourselves when you're out there? Or do you
we moved around. There's a guy called Anthony Canizzari who's involved with the Barclays Centre, and he looks after us, and he gets his gym. So we're all over the place. We're in different gyms. What's Gleason's is a really famous gym in New York. I hate it. Very commercialised. It's not a place to go to. Just very, very commercialised. So, but I'll be back out there.
Good stuff, guys. We'll pick this up in just a few moments' time. You're listening to TKO on Joe, together with 32 Red, Chris Lloyd, and Carl Frampton, with Jimmy McDonald Jr. First up, here's a quick word from Alex Payne, James Haskell, and our team from the House of Rugby.
Chris, thank you very much indeed. It's just a moment or two for us to duck in and tell you about the House of Rugby. We're into show 18 or 19 with James Haskell and Mike Tindall. Show 17, I'm told by producer Si. We're having a lot of fun. What are we trying to do with the show? Why should people be watching and listening?
We are basically trying to mix everything up.
This is going into another show so that people come and watch us.
Oh,
hello everyone. Oh. Hello to nice people.
Right, well, we should basically watch House of Rugby because it's unbelievable humour. We don't talk about any rugby, and we give you the inside track from people who are still actually involved in rugby, not old 60-year-olds who don't know anything.
Good. Tens, your views?
Yeah,
you've offended all the Irish. You've offended most of the clubs.
Basically, we try and offend anyone who possibly works against the English. So the Irish have been hit hard. We're just building up to the Welsh, and then we're going to finish off by fucking putting down the Scottish. Yeah, that's
good
my
stuff.
Mother-in-law as well.
So, just perfect. Want to reiterate, we are a family show, despite the 30-second trail, including... There we go. You can download us via YouTube. You can tell we're a very professional outfit. You can watch us via YouTube and download us via iTunes. I hope you'll join us at some point. It's a lot of fun, really.
Thanks, guys. Well, remember, you can download House of Rugby and listen to it now. The episode with Joe Marler is available online. Well, you're listening to and watching TKO with me, Chris Lloyd, and Carl Frampton on Joe together with 32 Red. Okay, back with you, gents. Let's get stuck into the tactics for the fight on Saturday. A possible change for Eubank, obviously working with Nate Vasquez now. Have you been sort of keeping an eye on the sort of videos he posts a lot on social media? And do you see any changes from the last 3 or 4 years?
He says that he's listening, but I've seen a few just clips on YouTube and stuff. He's obviously doing things specific to a southpaw. But there's doing things specific to a southpaw, and then there's getting in the ring with someone who's won Olympic gold medal, 2 world titles. He's a different... No one can emulate what James DeGale brings. He's so awkward and hard to fight.
Because Dennis Duggins is small, compact, and he's quite aggressive as well. He's a different sort of southpaw.
Very surprised with that choice of sparring partner when I seen him last week. And I don't want to be speaking out of turn here and talking about sparring, but it's known that he's sparring that guy. And he's 5'10".
Yeah,
a little stocky, southpaw, not really similar to James at all, really.
Someone like a Cody Davis would be good, kind of slightly awkward back foot.
That's right,
like quite big as well, because James is quite big super middleweight.
He's a big boy, he's
so
a big boy.
It would make sense, but I guess, you know, it's their choice at the end of the day who they have in. But I guess the question is, does a leopard ever change its spots? Because we think of Eubank Jr. as a young man, but he's 30 now. He'll be 30 this year, rather. Is he capable of making the adjustments at this stage of his career?
I don't know. I think we'll find out a lot on Saturday night. There's going to be a lot of questions to be answered. But it's a point where, you know, we spoke to his dad last week, and he said that when he was making these big statements about him being the second coming of Mayweather and stuff, he said it was because the stuff he was seeing in the gym, and he's seen him, like, you know, beating up Groves and sparring really well, but he doesn't listen and he doesn't put it into action on fight night. So he needs to change something, because there is a big hype about him, but as of yet he hasn't lived up to it.
Have you ever spoken to Eubank Senior out of interest?
Do you know what, there's actually a story. He won't remember this, but I do. I must have been about 12 or 13, and my dad used to be in the same stable as him when they was like professionals under the Matchroom banner, and he rang my dad out of the blue one day and was like, oh, you know, Jimski, he calls him Jimski, and was like asking about everything, like, how's the family, how's your kids? And he was like, yeah, all good, Chris. He was like, are they there? So, of course, I was only young, I was just sitting in the front row at the time.
Short straw here.
So they've gone, he's gone, here, Jay, like, Eubanks wants to talk to you. And I, at the time, I only knew him as the guy with the monocle that drove the big truck on TV. So I've gone on the phone and I was like, hello? And then I just remembered the conversation bit. I remember being on the phone for about 15 minutes and he was just talking to me about life and the ethics of life and how to be...
11 years old.
How to be a man and...
Chivalrous.
And like, not only just in life...
You've got Sonic the Hedgehog on pause and he's like telling you about...
Yeah, just like... Yeah, it was like not even boxing related, but it was almost like Eubank Senior says that you need to take like a beating in life to really come back and come strong. Not from my old man, but just in, I think, just everything. I could be in a school playground.
Hasn't even done his 11 plus all this.
I haven't even set my GCSEs. I remember the conversation fairly well, but he won't remember it. I'm pretty sure of that. And I remember just coming off the phone thinking,
what has just happened?
What has just happened? I've just had a 15-minute conversation with Chris Eubank.
Well, because we were in the car after the interview last week, and there was sort of silence for about a minute, and then Carl just went, what the hell just happened there?
And I thought, wasn't bad.
What did you reckon? Yeah, it was right.
Good accent. That
was good there, wasn't it?
Not bad.
He's like,
got a few in the locker. it was as much as an interview. It was more like a lecture last week.
Yeah.
Do you think that?
Yeah, well, that's what it felt like. But he's a big personality, and I think that's what we expected. But I think it was brilliant. That's the first time I've you know, really spoke to Chris Eubank. I've been around him at like awards nights and stuff on a couple of occasions. I think I've shook his hand maybe once or twice, but I've never actually spoken to him. So I was very nervous last week, but I enjoyed it, and he's a character, certainly.
Yeah. Well, I mean, he'll be presumably in the corner somewhere on Saturday night. I mean, whether he's going to be sort of standing over Junior like he has done so many times. But do you think he's more of a hindrance than a help? And do you think he has been more of a hindrance than a help?
I don't really know, because it might work for Chris Junior. I don't really know how they sort of like get on with each other. But he's always been around him his whole career.
Yeah.
And in the build-up to this one, he's not really been around a lot. So it feels... If you certainly notice that he's missing, but obviously he's back now, and I'm sure he'd be around somewhere. But at some stage, I'm sure if the fight's not going his way or whatever, have to give him a bit of advice or whatever. But at some stage, I think he will be involved.
There's similarities between the dad and the son, in that they both talk a lot, but the dad backed it up. And he was in some amazing fights and some real wars as well, where he had to dig himself out of holes and he won. The son talks, but he's yet to do that yet.
He looks really good against certain type of opposition. That classic Eastern European, quite heavy-footed, not a lot of head movement, and durable guys. But the ones he's come unstuck against have been the movers and the thinkers. Yeah. And we know what James is. I mean, tactically, the last thing you want to get stuck doing is laying on the ropes. Because if he boxes like he did against Truax in the first fight, it's going to be a really grueling night for James.
We don't need that.
So is the plan to keep on the move?
Plan is to just be James DeGale. Just be James DeGale, box, do things that won you an Olympic gold medal and two world titles. Mm. And, you know, that should be more than enough if James is still near his best to beat Chris Eubank Jr.
Do you reckon?
I think it's a very, very intriguing fight. I'm going to show you a text message I just sent to a guy, just so you don't think I'm bullshitting.
Okay.
Don't be looking at that.
Don't hold on. Does anyone know what that is?
Right, David Kelly, and he's a journalist from the Belfast Telegraph. I've changed my mind. I'm going to say DeGale points even before I've spoken to Jimmy Mack.
Yeah.
That's
pretty cool.
Yeah, that's my prediction.
There you go.
Yeah. And it must be kind of quietly satisfying, because I think, and the one thing we need to talk about, of course, is that sparring story. Because, listen, we've heard both sides of the story of when they sparred. I remember speaking to Eubank Jr. about it probably a year after it happened. You were there, and I know you to be an honest guy. There's the one thing I do know that you are. So let's talk about what happened that day in sparring. It's quite an interesting one, isn't it?
Yeah, he come down, but he's been around and sparred with everyone, Junior, isn't he? So he come down one day, and he come in the gym, and he's very sort of like zoned in. He don't really speak to no one. He was doing his own thing, and the spar was delayed because Senior was late, funny enough. And we had to wait for Senior to come. So the spar started. And listen, it was just a spar.
Eight rounds, right?
So we'd agreed on eight. Then after five, I think Ronnie Davis said, listen, one more and that'll do. Of course, James kicked up a fuss and said, no, we've agreed on eight. We're doing eight rounds. No, that's it. Six would do. So Senior, to his credit, went, no, you've agreed to do eight. So you're doing eight rounds. So they've completed the spar. And... that was it. It was like one of them ones, just sort of half touch gloves, boom. So Junior's got out of the ring, and my dad said, right, Chunk, we're just going to do two rounds pads, two rounds shadow, then boom. Done your 12 rounds then, no problem. So he starts on the pads, and all of a sudden, I don't know whether he was told to do it, but Junior's come back to the ring, and you know how he gets in the ring, he jumps over the top ropes. He's jumped over the top rope into the ring whilst James is doing his pad work. And I just remember thinking at the time, yeah, this ain't going to go down too well.
Yeah.
So James has basically told him to...
Was this at Stonebridge?
No, this was in Loughton.
Was he on his own?
Junior?
Yeah.
No, he was there with... I think his brother was there, his dad was there. And
when he came back in?
Oh, when he... So everyone was still in the gym, but he jumps into the ring light on his own. And James basically told him to, you know, get out of the ring. And he ignored James. He just carried on doing what he was doing. He was just sort of like shadow boxing and walking about, whatever. So James has asked him again to get out of the ring. Of course, he's ignored him again. From there, he's walked over to him. I thought, it's going to go off here. Then next thing, Ronnie Davis has got up and just said to him, out, get out of the ring. So he's walked over, just got out of the ring, and that was it. He left the gym and went on Twitter and said that he'd schooled James Degale, and yeah, that's what got everyone talking, really.
Yeah, so it feels like he's been setting this up for about 7 years. But I guess
he's a man with a plan.
He is a man with a plan, and you have to respect that. But I suppose there's also a code of ethics around sparring that, you know, you don't really talk about it in public, and that's a kind of agreed code of ethics amongst boxers. And if you do talk about it, then you sort of break that code, right?
Yeah, I would agree with that. I certainly don't go around spreading sparring stories, but it happens, and everything seems to get exaggerated as well. So you never really there's two sides, and then there's the truth as well. You know what I mean? I remember I could tell you an interesting story about me sparring. I sparred John Simpson. I mightn't have had a pro fight yet, maybe one or two up in Scotland. He was British champion at the time. And he hit me a shot, dropped me, but it was like hand touched the ground, I got back up. I remember looking around and Barry McGuigan was there and I went, that's never happened before. You know, like, carry on with sparring, fine. Billy Nelson, I think to get one up on me after the round was over, that's enough for you today, kid, you've had enough, as if it was taking some sort of pounding, yeah, but it was fine. Got out anyway. So that, from me touching down, has turned into me getting carried out of a ring in a stretcher.
What?
Because John Simpson flattened me. That's how much things get exaggerated. So it's happened. Like, this is just, you know, Eubanks just finished a spar and he's already tweeting it. That's an extreme case of it. But whispers get exaggerated all the time.
Hmm. But at least it's obviously what he's dining out on and what he's building this fight off, even if you guys know that there's something different has actually happened.
Just before we go on, in his mind, although you know what happened and he's tweeting something different, through time, like, things change. So in his head, he may have actually thought that he beat up Degale. You know what
mad.
I mean?
He's mad.
So... he might be getting confidence from something that never happened.
You never know. You never know. I think he's so in his own world and just so... I mean, he'll never, ever admit that he lost to Billy Joe Saunders or George Groves. Like, even when he gets asked about the question now, he just diverts around it every which way. He can't bring himself to say the words that, I lost the fight, fair and square. That's it.
Because introspection is one of the most important things once you've lost a fight, presumably, because you need to learn from what you didn't do to make adjustments to know how to improve. But if you can't have that introspection and you can't even admit that you've lost fights, how can you be expected to improve, right?
That's right.
What would you do with him if you were coaching? If you got a hold of him 3 or 4 years ago, and putting aside the fact that he doesn't listen, technically, what are the things that you would want him to work on?
I don't think he's got the best defence, if I'm being honest. I think he's fairly easy to hit. I think he struggles with his feet. I think his feet are one of his worst attributes, really. Whether he's worked on that in training camp, I don't know. He's got a brilliant mindset because he believes in himself. He's obviously got a good engine. He's fit. He's strong. Probably just the defensive work and the footwork drills, really. Like, I think he lacks in them areas.
Dad never had great feet either. He had terrible feet, actually. Coming forward, he was all over the place if he had to go forward, but he found a way to win. I think a lot of people make out and talk about Eubanks' engine, which he certainly got a big engine, but he doesn't fight like he has a big engine. He fights in spurts for rounds. He doesn't fight a full 3 minutes of a round.
Yeah, goes for little walks.
Yeah, and it's kind of, if you've got a big engine, you need to use it.
Yeah. One of the things that get James is guilty of, you and I spoke about this the other day, it's not a criticism, just an observation. He sometimes, when he's in sort of cruise control, between like 7 and 9, he has a little switch off. Have you noticed that? And have you guys ever sort of talked about that?
We shout at him all the time. The Darrell fight's a perfect example. Yeah. Won the first 5 or 6 round with 2 knockdowns in the second round. So he's near enough 7, 8 rounds up, going into the second half of the fight, and basically nearly switched off for the remainder of the fight.
Yeah.
And Darrell was clawing it back, and then he finished strong for the last 2 and won it on points, yeah.
What is it? Has he ever sort of been able to explain it? Is he just...
Do you know what? I think, like, I don't even think it's just with boxing. I think if it was when he was at school, when he was doing... If he's doing any type of work, if he was here, his concentration's just never been the best.
Yeah.
Like, and you've got to keep on him all the time. Chunk, oh, yeah. Like, I'll do that. But sometimes if it's... I don't want to say, but if he feels like it's too easy for him in there, then he starts to get a little bit lazy and a little bit complacent. But he can't afford to do that.
Are you saying he's a dunderhead?
Am I saying he's a...
He's a dunderhead.
What, he's a dunderhead?
But daft.
Oh, he's mad.
No, but simple.
No, he's not simple. He's just... James is mad in his own way. Like, yeah. He'd do things where you go... Oh, he has done that. That is James.
Yeah. So if Chris is to have any sort of foothold in the fight, it could just be slightly after the midway point, you reckon?
I think he'll have patches of success in the fight. When they'll come, I don't know, but I can't see him having lots and lots of success, really. Mm. I think it'll be... The rounds he'll probably win will be the rounds where he'll just be forcing and sticking and trying to work away. There'll be scrappy rounds, but I think the rounds where James will win will be the rounds where he'll clearly just like beat him on just sheer ability.
So what is your prediction then for Saturday?
I think James DeGale beats him unanimously on points.
Yeah. I'm looking forward to this.
So am I.
Yeah. Last week, we did a 32-second challenge with 32 Red for Chris Eubanks Sr. Didn't last for 32 seconds, as I'm sure you've seen. Yeah. We got a sort of two-minute explanation on dandyism. Carl's vocabulary is doing this at the moment. but we are going to hopefully get it in within the 32 seconds with 32 Red with Jimmy Mack Jr. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
It's a quick word association game. So you saw it last week.
Just
right?
One word, yeah.
One word. I'm going to say a word. You're going to say the first thing that you think of.
Yeah. Dandyism.
Yeah.
Clueless.
Oh man, I'm so glad last week's over. Alright, we're gonna start the clock. James DeGale.
Class.
George Groves.
Good fighter. Two words.
Darrell.
Classy.
World titles.
Achievement.
Caleb Truax.
Stinker.
Defeat.
Guide.
Eubank Jr.
Deluded.
Eubank Sr.
Bonkers.
This Saturday night.
A win.
Retirement.
Possibly.
Carl Frampton.
Good fire.
Good. future.
Future. Successful.
I think that'll do.
Yeah.
Very, very nice. That's nice. We can actually cut that down into a Snapchat story, unlike last week.
The Carl Frampton one could have went one of two ways there, so...
Yeah. I like the way he looked at you, shit himself, then come out
with
a good...
I just looked at him and he could feel my eyes burning into him.
If you... It was to sort of give Carl any advice, the situation he's currently in, obviously, three-time two-weight world champion, lost a very high-profile fight at... He's 31 years of age. Where do you go from there? What advice do you offer a fighter in Carl's position?
Really, Carl's just... He knows within himself, like... He knows what he wants to do. He'll know how much he's got in him, ready for his future or whatever. But it's all within himself, because if you've not got that in you no more, if that fire's not burning, then the best thing you can do is to get out. But from speaking to him, I think the fire's still burning. But he's been someone I've watched and admired for years now. He's a brilliant fighter. And
it's a hard question. Considering I'm sitting here,
I know.
But what you said something about James isn't fighting for money anymore. He's fighting because he feels like he's something to prove, and he's enjoying boxing. And I'm in the same boat.
Yeah,
exactly the same boat. I am really enjoying it now, although I lost my last fight. But there's still plenty left, I think, and I'm hoping it's the same for James as well.
Yeah, well, very good luck to you on Saturday, Jim. Thanks,
Chris,
so much for coming on, mate. Appreciate it. Carl,
man,
as always,
James.
Thanks for your time.
Man.
And happy birthday, mate. Enjoy the rest of your day. We're going to get some lunch, shall we?
Let's do it.
Well, you've been listening to and watching TKO Round 3 here on Joe Together with 32 Red. Many thanks to Jimmy McDonald Jr. Good luck to you on Saturday night. We'll be back in 7 days' time. Catch us on all the normal social media channels. We'll see you in a week.
Joe presents TKO. Together with 32 Red.